Things are not written down in the form of a constitution. There them, for instance, in Srimad Bhagavatam, you'll find the details quite extensively written, for instance, in the 7th canto, progressively from the 11th to the 16th chapter, narrating when he talks about what are social structures, which in one word is called Varnashram. It is the Varnashram society. And Krishna says, Chaturvayam Mayashishram Guna Karma Vipadasam. So Tasya Kartamakinam. This is the social structure that I have established. And it's a social structure that has a specific goal. And what is that goal? That goal is to facilitate human beings ultimately to go back home, back to Godhead. There are different grades of human beings. Some are not very civilized. Some are more advanced, but yet at the same time not clear about what the ultimate goal of life is. But still, by following these rules, by living with the benefit of the rights that are provided in such a social structure, they gradually move along from life to life. And then ultimately, you have the topmost human beings, which are Vaishnavas, who are very clear about what the goal of the human form of life is. But nonetheless, we see historically throughout Srimad Bhagavatam that Vaishnavas also conduct themselves. In fact, Krishna says, yadaracharati shrishas tattadeva tarotanaha syat pramanam kubite lokus tadavvartite yadiham navarshtayam jatukarnyatandya. He says, if I didn't do this, then no one else would. So Krishna lived in Vrindavan. When he was living in Vrindavan, he did what? He performed the duty of a Vaishya, Krishi Gauraksha Vanidram. And Krishna would tend to the cows. He's God, but still he's tending cows. And Mother Yashoda, when Krishna would go out in the morning, she would object. She says, why don't you wear shoes? Why are you going out barefoot? He says, there are thorns out there. And Krishna replied, no. He says, the duty of our class is that we take care of the cows barefoot. The cows don't wear shoes. So if the cow who's our mother don't wear shoes, then why should I wear shoes? So then Krishna also goes out and takes care of the cows barefoot. Of course, there are no thorns in Vrindavan, and the stones become very soft at Krishna's touch. But nonetheless, Krishna does his dharma. Then, when of course Krishna went to Dwarka and took on the role of a kshatriya, then we read how he would rise in the morning, he would give charity to brahmanas, he would perform all the activities which are incumbent upon a king, upon a kshatriya. And he would set the proper example, the perfect example. So the question comes up that in the Krishna consciousness movement, are we supposed to actually practice or establish Varnashram? If you look at Srila Prabhupada's instructions in that regard, especially in the years from 1974 up until 1977, Srila Prabhupada was very concerned that the members of his society also follow that social system that Krishna had given. Why? Because it's very conducive for becoming Krishna conscious. And Srila Prabhupada had seen that although he had hoped that devotees would transcend very quickly, but after a few years it became very obvious that devotees didn't become transcendental so very quickly. And so when devotees had said, but Srila Prabhupada, you said earlier on that devotees are transcendental and that they don't need Varnashram. He says, yes, if you're transcendentally situated, then you are, you don't need it. That doesn't mean you don't follow it, you just don't need it. He says, but you're falling down. And Srila Prabhupada would keep coming back with this phrase, but then why are you falling down? So because it's not an easy thing to live within the host society that we live in, or to live even within the Krishna consciousness movement unless it has very clearly defined boundaries, unless everyone knows what they can do and what they can't do, and what the consequences of not doing the right thing are. In other words, not acting according to one's specific karma. So Srila Prabhupada was concerned when we hear, for instance, His Holiness Purushottam Maharaj speaking about his own experience. He's talking about something that more resembles the Vedic culture. And we talk about Vedic culture a lot. But where is the Vedic culture? Aside from chanting Hare Krishna, aside from hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, but where is actually the social foundation, the social structure that actually facilitates devotees to come from the stage of being sadhakas, who are actually very intoxicated and very much dependent on the lifestyle that we're used to in the world around us, on this very chaotic social structure that we live in, because we see it changes all the time. For instance, in the late 1800s, one very famous British author was put into jail in England for homosexuality. Now, things have changed 100 years later. Nowadays, there's same-sex marriage. In fact, same-sex couples adopt children in order to have, quote-unquote, a family. So with these type of changing values, you have a changing social structure. And that social structure is not conducive for being Krishna conscious, but rather, not only is it competing with Krishna consciousness, but it's destructive. And so we see that devotees who live in cities and are very much influenced by their environment are constantly in this mode of trying to compete, or rather survive, maintain their Krishna consciousness is in an environment where everything around them is antagonistic to that, including what the role of women are. Because, of course, one of the aspects of democracy, and for democracy started in England, and then it spread. This is the largest democracy in the world, here in India. But it started in England, spread to America, and from America there's this sort of concept that actually democracy is something that works everywhere, and part of democracy is that everyone has equal rights, or rather, everyone equal rights means everyone should be doing the same thing. Men should do the same thing as women should do, which means that maybe men should be the ones who are at home taking care of the house, and women should be out becoming career professionals. But we see that democracy doesn't really work. If you follow the news, you see that, for instance, America was bent on Iraq and other countries, so on, becoming democracies, or Libya. These countries have imploded under the fact that democracy doesn't work in these places. In other parts of the Middle East, for instance, democracy meant that the people voted in a terrorist organization as government. So democracy is not the social structure that Krishna established. Krishna's social structure is tasya karkaramakimam. I set up this social structure. And our Krishna consciousness movement is meant to establish that social structure, and when we do, then actually we have a shelter, we have the facilities in which actually women can really play the role of women, and mothers can really be mothers, and mothers can really be honored. Until then, we'll continue to talk about it, and we need to talk about it, and we need to talk about ideal examples, and we try to work, but it won't actually be a holistic or a contextual solution. It'll only be dealing with one part of a greater issue. And for that reason, the establishment that Srila Prabhupada mentioned, this was 50% of his mission. And in his last days, Prabhupada was actually an active mentor. He said, actually, only half of my work is complete. I've translated these books and I've established our temples, which give the formula for how to become Krishna conscious and what to do. And yet, the other half, which is establishing Varnashram, or the social structure, the host structure, which is favorable for devotees. And ultimately, what does it mean that it's favorable for devotees? That it also shows it's a social structure which the rest of the whole world can adopt. I'm sure that you must have experience when you're preaching, that you're preaching, and sometimes someone will ask, well, what would you do if the whole world were Krishna conscious? How would you organize society? How would you organize society? So what would you do? We talk about everybody being Krishna conscious, but how does a whole world that's Krishna conscious, how does it look? What are everyone's roles? What does government mean in that type of context? What is the duty and responsibility of men and of women and of workers, and how much profit can you get? Who's a politician? Is the politician the person who tricks everyone and cheats everyone and who, as Srimad Bhagavatam says, can bewilder everyone with the words that they say, or is a politician a perfect example? Is he someone who actually leads by example? He's, practically speaking, a perfect person. He's a leader. He knows what the goal of life is. And he shows everyone else how to actually live in an ideal lifestyle. That's not a politician. You can't just have anyone. If you follow in the ninth canto, the sort of degradation that happens amongst the leaders in Kali Yuga, then you see how from kings, kings become usurped by ministers, become usurped by shudras, by vaishyas, and the whole thing degrades onto what we have at the present time. And of course, ultimately, a society, although we know that in a society, brahmanas receive the highest respect, but actually a society without leadership and without exemplary leadership, what to speak of the consequence of not following the leadership? Unless that's there, you actually don't have a society. This is something that we also see in Krishna consciousness. We can, for instance, we have a very simple principle that we don't believe in divorce. But then what happens if someone divorces? Is there any consequence? Not really. There's a law in ISKCON law book that you can't become a GDC or a temple president. But that's only for GDCs and temple presidents. But then what about others? What's the consequence? So a society is only as organized and structured as the consequences of not following the social order. Maharaj Venu stepped out of line, and rather than teaching others how to serve God, he wanted to become God. The Brahmins immediately killed him, just by their curse. But Srila Prabhupada often says, but it's also the king's duty or the leader's duty to ensure that the brahmanas are in line. In other words, they have to be so exemplary, they have to be so knowledgeable, they have to be so powerful, that if they see that some Brahmin is actually not speaking the truth, that he's misleading others, that he's misguiding someone else, then he actually corrects it. And of course, then the correction and the punishment is different. If you see in Manu Samhita, for instance, elderly persons, women, children, Brahmins, they're dealt with differently than you will that you deal with a adult male, or that you deal with another Kshatriya, different types of people. And of course, sometimes we have an allergy to this type of terminology, that someone's a Kshatriya, and someone's a Brahmin, and someone... And we're not. At least we're not, those who are Vaishnavas. But at the same time, we are. Because Chaturvayam Shishtami Krishna said, everyone's acting according to their nature. So guna karma. that. Someone acts in the role of a teacher or an educator. Someone else is acting in the role of an administrator. Someone else is working in a mercantile community. And someone is working as an employee. So all of these things immediately indicate a certain thing. But of course, over and beyond these type of material designations is the spiritual designation that I am Krishna Das. I am a Vaishnava. And therefore, it is stated that Vaishnava Guru Mati, Vaishnava Jati Guru, that you can't call someone who's a Vaishnava, you can't relegate them to a material designation because they've already gone beyond, at least in theory, beyond that material designation. We identify with them as Vaishnavas. But still, for the sake of showing the proper conduct in society, how should society be structured, how should this world be structured in such a way that everyone can actually progress towards the ultimate goal of life. Not that in a way that everyone actually becomes degraded. And that will only happen when the world around us also follows Krishna's plan. This is the way Krishna has established society. This is what works. These other types of social structures don't work. They implode. And ultimately, they're detrimental. No matter how good it sounds that women should be professionals, that they should go to university, be career women, they should maybe have a child when they're 35 years old, but maybe not. Ultimately, children can be a real handicap for your own career. These type of ideas don't work. For instance, just the practicality of it doesn't work because you all know it doesn't require to be any kind of educator. You don't have to be a genius to know that if you don't have children, society comes to a halt. You have no society. At a certain point, we all die out. And it's not enough, actually, even just to have one child. It's not even enough to have two children. Because one child, one boy, one girl, they marry, and that boy is the one who is the breadwinner, and ultimately he has to maintain the mother-in-law on this side and his mother and father on that side, as well as his own children. Gotta be a pretty good earner to be able to do something like that. So social structure doesn't maintain unless families generally have at least 2.4 children. Of course, the 0.4 doesn't mean you have a half a child, like Jarasandha was sort of half born and half. But it means that more or less someone has two, someone has three, someone has four. And that way society, from the sociological and the economic point of view, can maintain itself. Yes, a family with three children, the children can then maintain their parents as well as their own children. Otherwise it becomes impossible. And then of course, when you have no children, or you only have one child, then you have certain, not just countries, but continents, for instance, like Europe, which has a negative population growth. In other words, there's more people dying than are taking birth. So it doesn't matter what type of economic structure you have, you're going to collapse. As much as, for instance, 40 years ago, when you had the welfare system, you had seven employed people for every one retired person. So seven people were working. And of course, you know the pension scheme is, the pension system is they pay into a pension scheme. And then, of course, the government is spending that on maintaining someone else right now with the hope that at some time in the future, people are going to be working and they're going to be paying for your pension. But today, there's only 2.5 people working for every one person who is retired. And of course, people are living longer and longer and longer. So it becomes an impossible thing. It's not a secret. If you look, for instance, over the last 10 years, governments in the developed world in the first world have raised the retirement age from 65 to 67 to 69, and they'll keep raising it. It's very interesting, you know, in Hungary, where I live, the retirement age for men is 66 years old, 67 years old. But the average lifespan of men is only 60 years old. So, like, it's not even enough that you're already dead. You have to keep working another 6 years after you're dead in order to make the whole social structure work. It's a good thing that ladies generally live 10 years longer than men. So I'm not... it's a little divergent on the theme of mothers, but my whole point was to actually keep it within the context, because mothers of themselves, even if mothers are perfectly treated and function perfectly, they need to fit within a perfectly functioning social framework. And it's something that I recommend that you can all consider, study Srila Prabhupada's instructions. There are books available which are actually compilations of Srila Prabhupada's instructions on Varnashram. And specifically, Srimad Bhagavatam deals very extensively. There's 5 chapters of Srimad Bhagavatam that deal solely with the duties of grihasthas, varnaprasthas, sannyasis, brahmacharis, and Narada Muni. And this isn't even a grihastha who's giving the example, it happens to be Narada Muni who's explaining this to us. And while he also talks about all of the different varnas and ashramas, and then he talks about women's role specifically, and it's very, very interesting. Is that why? Because although there are the different duties and responsibilities of the varnas and ashramas, but women are very unique. Because, as Maharaj had stated earlier, Arjuna said that Adharma Vibhavat Krishna Pravishyanti Kulastriyas Trishu Usheshu Arshniya Jayati Varna Sankara. If women are not properly protected, if women don't play their role, you can do whatever you want. You can have whatever economic, sociological, political system you want to make, society is going to implode. A healthy society depends upon women actually being allowed and protected to play their role. If they do, society will flourish. Why? Because Maharaj said that Vaikuntha children, you will get Vaikuntha children. But if they don't, then you'll get Varna Sankara. And of course, at least my generation, we all came from Varna Sankara. Here we got children who are like Vaikuntha children. And we know what it's like to be Varna Sankara because you're carrying a lot of bad karma. You're not coming from a pure background. So, yes, to actually show respect, it's a shame. It's a shame that we have to talk about respecting mothers. Why? Why do we talk about it? Because it's not there. For instance, do we have to talk about devotees not stealing? Are we holding a lecture here that devotees shouldn't steal each other? That devotees shouldn't beat each other up? That devotees shouldn't call each other names? No. Why? Because it's understood. So why do we talk about respecting mothers? Why do we talk about the proper role of mothers within society? Because unfortunately, it's something that's very much lacking. And we have that type of conduct because it's the type of conditioning that we're bringing in from this world around us, which is a world based on exploitation. And you exploit anyone that you can get your hands on. You exploit women, you exploit children, you exploit men. Everyone is just jiva, jiva, sujivanam. Everyone is just eating everybody else up. And for us to actually have a whole mind shift where the whole idea is that we're meant to give protection to each other. And that it's all right, as Purushottam Maharaj said, to love each other and to be loved to each other. And to actually have faith that, yes, love is a greater power than strength. And that type of loving atmosphere actually comes when women are properly protected and they're allowed to be in their role, then the love that they generate actually gives that type of shelter and protection, that type of strength that even materialistic persons admit that yes, behind every great man, there's a great woman. So whoever it may be, of course, their example is behind a Napoleon, there's a Josephine, and so on and so forth. But in our example, for instance, behind the Pandavas, there was a Draupadi. And I'll just close with that. What it meant actually in the time when there was a Varnashram culture. I mean, here's an example of Yudhisthira Maharaj. Yudhisthira Maharaj at one point when he was speaking in the assembly, because there was someone that questioned his integrity in this gambling match. So Yudhisthira Maharaj said that in my entire life, I've never performed, and I've never thought of performing an irreligious activity. Even the thought has not crossed my mind. This is what a politician is. Someone who doesn't think about doing anything bad. And of course, when you have such a person who's ruling, then everyone else is well protected, and everyone else is playing their role. But anyway, when the Pandavas were in exile, then Krishna came to visit. And Krishna came on several occasions. And on one occasion, Satyabhama was also with him. So Satyabhama was sitting with Draupadi, and he was asking them, tell me how you're controlling your husbands so that I can also learn, because I see you've got five husbands, and they're so submissive to you. So Draupadi gives very very detailed instruction, very, very interesting things is what she's saying. And she says in the palace, it says, I'm the first one up every morning, and I'm the last one to go to sleep at night. He said, I'm always cheerful and happy. I always greet my husband with sweet words. He says, I never eat until my husbands, their servants, and until every member of the household, and this is five palaces, until they're all fed. And she goes on to describe all kinds of other things. So it's not a small thing being a mother. It's a real challenge. On the other hand, it's also a real challenge being a father, because unless women have the suitable protection from real qualified men, they're not going to be able to be qualified women. Both of them are required. Maharaj is emphasizing this point. You need qualified fathers, you need qualified husbands, you need qualified sons, you need qualified leaders. And when we actually have the type of qualifications that Krishna establishes, then things will work. And we'll have a society. So in the context of respecting and appreciating our mothers, he's trying to consider what type of social structure is actually required for our Krishna consciousness movement, and that same social structure which once we live, then we can tell the world around us, yes, this is the social structure that works. And if we were actually, if everyone in the world became Krishna conscious, this is the type of society that we would establish, the type of society that's in the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. Hare Krishna. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Maharaj. Everyone's context is so nice.